the library forum. I'm Ann Kenny. You're a university librarian. Still. And, oh, thank you. And before I introduce our speaker today, I have an announcement that there will be elections held this spring for some new members to the Library Forum Steering Committee. I think we can all agree that the committee has done a crackerjack job of bringing us a whole wonderful array of things, including featured speakers this year, and I hope you will consider joining them in this process. And I also understand that there will be a call for volunteers for the Career Development Committee as well, so I hope you will consider that. So I think this has been misnamed Library Forum. I think it's the Susan Curry Fan Club. And I was trying to actually identify folks who don't know Susan Curry in the room. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I believe there's somebody who just started about a week ago and may not know you, but I may be wrong about that. I was mentioning to someone else whenever Susan comes up and has coffee with me at Live Cafe. I buy coffee every day from Live Cafe, but when I come in with Susan, Doris goes, Susan! You know, and I might as well not be there. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, we are really pleased to have Susan come back for homecoming. And her talk is Public Libraries, Academic Libraries, More Alike Than Different. And I can't think of a better person really to address this topic because she has traveled both of those worlds very, very well. She became the director of the Tompkins County Public Library in October of 2009. It seems like you've been there longer than that based on the thing. And prior to that, she was the associate director of university libraries at Binghamton. And, of course, we know her most for her 20 years at Cornell University Library. Beginning in the early 80s, she was at Urist Library with a whole slew of folks. Let's see, Howard was there, Lance was there, Linda was there, Janet was there. Kathy was there?
Kathy.
Oh, okay, good. So, at any rate, from there, she came over and went to Olin Library and headed Access Services there. And then when you all may remember that brief moment when we had IRIS, Instruction, Research, and Information Services, and I was able to convince Susan to come and be the Director of Resources and Planning. It was just wonderful to work so closely with you, Susan. So with nearly 31 years as a librarian, her professional background includes working in, I think, all areas of the library, with extensive experience in design and implementation of innovative, high-quality, user-centered services. The thing that I remember about Susan was, I think we should try, and then the next day it was there. So she has a strong collaborative leadership style. She is wonderful at managing projects and just has a special touch with people. So, Susan, welcome back.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? I'm so excited to be here. It really is nice to see all of my friends and colleagues. And you know, I realized when I said how long I'd been a librarian, I wasn't so good at math, because this October will be 30 years. So, but maybe I'm counting
you. Extra.
Give me an extra year, because I worked in libraries before I had the MLS. So I have been a librarian. I've been a librarian for 30 years this October. I have been a public librarian for a year and a half. And, you know, when I started thinking about this talk, I started out thinking about, well, all libraries are alike. And I started out saying, oh, well, academic libraries and public libraries are more alike than different. But as I began to really think about it, it's within those very similarities that there are enormous differences. And so that's what I'm going to spend some time talking with you about today. So, you know, one of the jokes that I make is I'm kind of like someone who went to a tent revival. know, because since I've been in the public library, when people walk in the door every day, I really see the difference that the library makes in their lives. I love being a librarian, and I always did, and it was always about service for me. It was all about equal access, and I always tended to be on the bleeding edge of wanting to be, you know, as much access as you could give. That's what I wanted to do, and I can remember when we started circulating bound periodicals. It was kind of radical back then. So I actually remember being in this room for a lot of automation training or somewhere in a room like this. And so there are many of you here with whom we've worked on wonderful projects together. And the years that I spent at Cornell were absolutely wonderful. Wonderful training for going to SUNY Binghamton and working with that library that needed a lot of changes. And then, you know, taking that experience and bringing it back to the community at large. I loved living in Ithaca, and being the head of the public library is a way to really show love to the community that has given me so much. So it's a great honor to be at that public library, I'll tell you that. But I will tell you that the things that I've seen the public library do is contribute dramatically to early literacy through, you know, the story times. Toddler story time. We have author visits. We have free access to the internet, and that's one of the most important things that we do. It's not just free books and access to the internet. It's DVDs and downloadable books. I'll talk about that a little bit. Music, databases, really about point of service. Boom, you got it. And that's what I like. And I'll tell you something, I was joking, making jokes with people who came in earlier that, you know, I've always tended to be someone who moves pretty rapidly. I like to go fast. I like change. I don't know what I was doing in all those other jobs because I thought I was working hard, but it is nothing like a public library. So first, a little bit of history. So how many of you know the history of the public library here? How many of you know who founded? Well, I expected more, but that's a fan. So in all the years that I worked at Cornell, I thought I knew the history of the public library, but, I know that some of my colleagues here were more knowledgeable than I was, but I think that I'm not unlike a lot of people at Cornell who really weren't aware of the history of the public library here. So before there was a Cornell University, Ezra Cornell in 1862 decided that he wanted to build the town of Ithaca public library. So the original library is this black and white photo up here in the upper corner. And the public library, the Cornell Free Public Library, was chartered in 1864. It was the sixth chartered public library in the state. It was the first chartered library in a village. And then he founded Cornell University. The first faculty meetings were held in the library, which opened in 1866. It had three floors. It had a bank in it. It had his personal office. We have the desk that was in his personal office in the library downtown. It actually had space for the DeWitt Guard to practice their military drills. And so they had the first faculty meeting in the library there, and they had the first commencement. And when Ezra Cornell died, his body lay in state in Library Hall. So there's a lot about the history. We actually have a ledger downtown in one of the bookcases there that has entries of Ezra Cornell and the number of books that was purchased from the corner bookstore to go into the public library. It's really cool. And I think actually some of the original books are now in RMC here. So let's check it out. The original building, well, that's my next thing. Good question. Well, it was downtown on Tioga and Seneca Streets, and there's now a drive-through ATM. Remember, there used to be a drive-through bank, and now it's just a little ATM. It was right there. It's really sad that the library was torn down. But if you ever watch Channel 13 and watch the Common Council meetings, and you see the city seal, the building on the Ithaca City Seal is the old library building. So, So, the next library that was here, so what happened is that in 1958, New York State Legislature enacted education law to create public library systems and central libraries, and the Cornell Free Library was the central library for the Finger Lakes Library System, and I'll explain public library systems a little bit later. And in 1968 is when the public library, the Cornell Library, sold all of its assets, everything, to the county, and it became the Tompkins County Public Library, 1968. And then they built a state-of-the-art library. And I decided to put the architect's rendering rather than the picture of the library, the old library building, which is now just pretty much a palette for graffiti, and the county is trying to decide what to do with it. So, do you know where it's across the street from DeWitt Park? Yeah. Thank you, mm-hmm. So the current building that's downtown now, how many of you know, this is close, how many of you know what that building was before it was public library? Oh, okay, much better. So the existing building was a Woolworths building, and I am pretty sure that I have stuff in my basement from that Woolworths, so, although the goldfish died a while ago. Actually that's a wonderful example of the nature of the community we live in, because it was a great sustainability project to take that building and redo it and make it into the public library. It's an absolutely beautiful building. If you haven't been in there, I encourage you. And actually, just this past November, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of the public library being in the current location. So the sesquicentennial, of course, will be in 2014. It'll be a year before Cornell, so we're hoping to partner a little, and you'll hear more about that as time comes around. So you have to come down and visit the library. So when I started thinking about taking this job, I have to say it didn't occur to me to become a public librarian, but some of my friends, like Ann, knew me better than I knew myself and said, you know, you might really like that job. And I have to tell you, I do. I love it. But I did, there were parts of it that gave me pause, and there were parts of it that made me nervous. And I was a little bit afraid. I'm not a children's librarian, but I will tell you, in my world, in my view, children's librarians and kindergartner teachers do not make anywhere near enough money for what they do. They are amazing, and I watch them every day. They really help children on the path to literacy and for a love of reading. And for that, I think we should be eternally grateful. But that was the part that made me the most nervous. Fortunately, we have this amazing youth services department with these wonderful youth services librarians. And we recently just hired a new youth services librarian who is going to do a lot of work for our teams. And part of her interview was to do to present a story time, a toddler story time. But she didn't do the story time for children. She did it for the library staff so that they could all participate. And that was one of the bravest interviews I've ever seen. That's where people come in. If you think giving a story time is hard to your child, try giving story time to a room full of adults and getting them to participate. And she did. She was fabulous. So the one that we hired, they were all good, but the one we hired, I think it's going to be really great. So the similarities. I hope the similarities are obvious, you know, because we're libraries. We're committed to building and maintaining relevant collections. We're about understanding the community we serve. We're about services to our community. Each academic public libraries have a structured organization both internally and externally with regard to funding. We both have security issues, although there are differences, and we also have a lot to do with library systems and consortiums. But, you know, like I said earlier, it was the differences that started to really strike me, because I'm thinking also about my own personal experience working in the public library and having worked in an academic library. And these are what I think are the significant differences between public and academic libraries. And even though they're similar, there all are similarities, but within them they're very different. So I'm not going to talk a lot about academic libraries because everyone here works in an academic library. So I want to talk about these as they pertain to public libraries. I'm curious though, how many of you have a library card That totally rocks. So I like to ask people that, not to make them feel guilty, but you know, supporting your local library is really important. So I'm really glad to see that so many of you have a library card. I think it's also hard because I remember working at Cornell. There were amazing lectures and programs going on at Cornell all the time. And sometimes leaving work in a library to go to another library can, you know, be hard at the end of the day. But if you have children, and there are wonderful community programs for civic-minded people. So one of the things I like to say is that libraries are like politics. They're all local. And you better know your community or you will hear about it. And I know that was certainly true for me when I worked at Cornell. I would hear from faculty and students if we did something. And so for the public, they expect you to have things done immediately. And one of the things about public libraries is they have to respond so quickly to community needs. So like bestsellers, you better have that bestseller out the day it's published. So let me just talk a little bit about each one of these differences. The difference that is the most personal, important, and really is most powerful for me is the importance of connectivity. This is a core service that the library provides for the public. And I think that access to computers is something that most everybody takes for granted these days, but I can tell you that it is not the case. And I see the digital divide in our county in ways that I never imagined when I worked at Cornell. And if you haven't seen it, there's a wonderful report called Libraries Connect Communities, and it's a study about technology in public libraries. And there's an estimated 67% of U.S. public libraries provide the only free internet access for people who do not have computers. I think that's striking and amazing. So one of the most critical services that we provide is for job seekers, and the slide up there looking for a job need help is software that we recently purchased. We had so many people coming in asking for help creating a resume and filling out job applications that we purchased the specialized software, and we hear from local community members or businesses that they can tell based on where the printing from the applications that a lot of the job applications were done at the public library. So having this resume software has been really wonderful. You know, the bad economy came late to Ithaca, and it's probably going to leave late. And so this year, so we didn't see, you know, I joined the library late in 2009. It wasn't until late 2010 that I started to really see people coming in a little anxious. You know, people coming in who had been laid off, who really needed help. They needed to go back to school to get new job skills. And so helping them to navigate the internet is really important. And we see the range. We see people who have never had an email account. They need help setting it up. People who don't trust email. People who are not comfortable with technology and really need that information technology navigation. So I think that this is an area that will be really important for the future of libraries because, as I mentioned, I really see a huge digital divide in our community, and I think that that's growing.
I'm surprised that they're only 67% of the free public access. Who else is providing free public access to computers in the
Starbucks? Well, Starbucks has free wireless, but they don't have free computers, so... I don't know. I'd have to look at the report. I spent a lot of time looking at that report when I first started working at the library, and when the report first came out, the estimate was 70% of the public libraries provide free access. But there are things one of the things might be, Anne, is that there are job opportunity centers that have computers with free access to it in some states. So that's part of it. And there's actually some in New York State, too. And a lot of them are in libraries, but some are separate. So you can also, so if you think about something like Finger Lakes Reuse, they have a computer room where you can go and use the Internet. And we've actually talked with them about partnering to have the library come there and do some Internet tutoring. So they're isolated little places like that. Some public universities allow people to come in and use the internet for free. The SUNY system does. All of the SUNY libraries are, because they're public institutions, public can come in and use the computers. So. Yes. Yeah, some public schools. So I want to talk a minute about security, because security was one of my big things when I was in Access Services here and looking at Howard, because we worked on this a lot together. But security in a public library is very different. The security viewpoint that I had in academic libraries was certainly about safety of patrons and staff, but a lot of it was about the collection. In the public library, it's really about safety, personal safety. And a lot of public libraries, we see a lot of challenges in this particular area, because if you think about that first quotation I put up, it's completely open to everyone. So you get, some of our most vulnerable and needy citizens are also the most challenging. And we want them to come in the library, we want to help them, but they can be I don't know any other word to use other than challenge. So we see the range, and we're actually seeing an uptick in difficult behaviors during the bad economy. So we have, it's really important. One of the things that when I first got there, I started looking at the security procedure, and this is where having worked in Access Services really helped, looking at what did we need to update and who are our community partners that we needed to work with. So working with the Ithaca Police, the Mental Health Association so that we can call them, the county. One of the things about the Tompkins County Public Library is it's a county library. But we don't report to the county, and I'll talk about that organization later. But so we have to work with a whole variety of people to make sure that the library is welcoming and safe. And just last Friday, we had an all-day staff training day. One of the first things I heard from the staff there is they were concerned about security issues and procedures, and they felt that the procedures needed to be updated. So we brought in a national public library security consultant. His name is Warren Graham, and he calls himself the Black Belt Librarian. But he was very good. He was very good. So we spent all day, and we did invite the police to be there. They came. We had a representative from the police station who will work with us for training. We had someone from the Mental Health Association, someone from the county, and someone from the 911 call center. So working with those community partners is very important for security. Oh, I didn't put our security yet. Sorry. So this is our page about behavior policies. And one of the other things is that you have to be really explicit in public libraries about your policies. You can do this, you can't do this. And I have to tell you that this is a personal revelation for me, is that I want everything to be nice for everybody. I want it to work out well. And sometimes in a public library, you have to ban people. And I have a really hard time with that. But when it comes down to safety of staff and patrons, you really have to do that sometimes. So that was a change for me, and that's a big change, I think. In an academic library, we might send a student to the judicial administrator, and that was one of the jobs of sending report. My job when I was here is to send reports to the judicial administrator. But here, in the public library, you can't refer it to someone else. You really have to deal with it in-house. And it's an opportunity, and it's also sometimes very hard. I find it very hard. We see a lot of homeless people who come in who need a brief respite from the weather. Remember the snowstorm that didn't happen a couple of weeks ago? Well, we were closed, and I opened the library up at 1, and sure enough, the place was packed. People coming in because they didn't have another place to go. But also because they needed the computers. Those computers are heavily used. We added more computer stations this year, and we still saw a 3% increase in the use of computers. So we have, we outsource the security guard. We have, I think we use the same company, Securitas, that is used for the 24-hour security guard in Eurus. And so we had him come to our training as well. And that was really interesting to have him participate in that. So another big difference is collection development. So public libraries, academic and public libraries, we both have to know what our community needs are. And that's obvious. But for the public library, it really needs to reflect the total demographic of the area served. So, and public libraries are not collecting for the ages. I mean, one of the things I have had people ask me is, why don't we put things in Cornell's annex? Because we're not collecting research material, and it's more about, you know, what do people need right now? Not that we don't have a good collection of nonfiction and history, because we do. I found some amazing things in the nonfiction here. And that reflects the demographics of the county, because we have retired academics. We have a lot of, one of the things we're seeing is an increase in people from other countries. And we're seeing an increase in teenagers, families with children, and retired people. So you really have to pay attention. And the other thing is, I know that bestsellers and popular culture is a public library stock and trade, but there's a lot with genealogy, do-it-yourself, crafts and hobbies, and all of those kinds of things. Lots of languages. We get a lot of people who want to come and either learn English as a second language or they want to learn another language. And we have been talking with Tompkins Learning Partners, which is used to be literacy volunteers, about how do we partner together on the help that they do. They work with non-Cornell people who are English as a second language learners. And so we're partnering with them about how do we do this where we create a space for people to come to the library and practice English. And I think we have fun stuff. You know, you should. I mean, it's just fun. You know, like, you know, the librarians do this amazing thing where they pick a theme and then they ask you, they pull all of the resources of that and put it out on a table, and you can just, you know, find these wonderful things to read that are fun. Oh, one other thing. You may one day need a large print collection. So you need to get a library card if you don't have one, because parking is a lot better down there than air. One of the things we are experimenting with is e-readers. So, for example, we had a grant, and we got some Kindles and some Nooks, and you can, with the ability to make the print larger. We'll experiment with that for some of the readers who take out large print, because it's a lot easier to take out the Stieg Larsson trilogy on a Nook than taking out three giant books. So that's another thing that libraries do. So, but and we have all kinds of audiobooks, DVDs, and music. And how many of you are aware of OverDrive, the downloadable service? Okay, that's pretty good. Okay. if you haven't used this is a really cool service. If you go to the library website, it's something called OverDrive, and it's downloadable audio books, e-books, and music. You check it out with your library card, no overdue fees, it just goes away. You don't have to worry about it.
So, do you have books on OverDrive that you missed?
Some of them, yes. Some of the most popular ones. I don't know what the percentage is, but definitely, yeah. So, I think the services, I have to tell you, I think the librarians at the public library are the most amazing librarians, because I could, you know that thing you said, Anne, about, oh, why don't we try? I mean, I'll walk through the hall and say, why don't we try blah, blah, blah. You know, why don't we try putting a pool on the ceiling? You know, okay, it's done. You know, they do it so quickly. Their service is amazing. They really connect with the community. Readers advisory is something that public libraries do, and we have some wonderful librarians who really can teach you how to judge a book by its cover. And someone who gives a talk, and if you're ever looking for someone to give a talk on that, we have a great librarian who can do it and tell you how to decide if you like a book. So one of the things I like to do is, I think we have this really beautiful library website with all these resources. You can find up to, you can if you're interested in getting a list of the latest bestsellers or what we have, you can sign up for, I counted them, I have to look. Yeah, you can sign up for 18 subject-specific book lists to be delivered to your email. And you can sign up for 15 different thematic lists. So if you're interested in graphic novels, for example, you can get that list. And we have this, the Chili Fresh picture there is where, you know, it's kind of like the Amazon, if you like this, you might like that, where you patrons can write their own reviews of books that they've checked out. So And the librarians do a lot. If you go to the library website under the We Suggest, you can find a lot of information. If you like mysteries and you like Stieg Larsson, you might like this. You know, they do a great job with that. So continuing on talking about collections, we have a really nice small digital collection. I was surprised when I got there to find this. This is a local history collection, and this is done in partnership with the History Center. It's heavily used for genealogy, and it is also used for local community information, local history. I do have a link to it if there's time at the end and you're interested. I can show you, but I know that I think the slides will be available after this so you could link to it, but you could also go right to the website. This is a project that started before I started at the library. Two of our librarians worked with the Library Foundation to get a grant from the Park Foundation, and they went through all of the materials that they had, specialized materials, and also went to the History Center for some maps. And they actually took the materials up to Rochester and used one of the Curtis machines, the fast scanning machines. And this is fairly heavily used. I was surprised, but I've only been there a year and a half, so what I know, right? We do a lot, as I said, with genealogy. There are two really great databases called Ancestry Library Edition Genealogy and Heritage Quest Online Genealogy. And actually, I think someone from here told me, I think it was Angela, who said that a local history question was referred to the library. We were looking for some local businessman, and it was in our local history collection. So take a look at that. It's really nice. So other differences that I had on that list is organization and funding. And this list is where there are the biggest differences. We're county employees, but we don't report to the county. I report to a 15-member board of trustees. Some of those trustees are here. Thank you very much. I think that sometimes public library systems, we all think that we know about them, but they're very confusing until you live it. You know, you don't really get the rhythm of them. I know I learned about this in grad school. So the other thing about our public library is we are only 75% funded by the local county government. We get a little bit from the state through the Finger Lakes Library System, which I'll explain later. We get a little bit from the sales tax from the city of Ithaca, and we get a little bit from the town of Ithaca. But the rest of it is fundraising. So I have to do a lot of fundraising, and that was new to me. I've certainly done activities in support of fundraising for whatever library I was working in. But fundraising for the public library is a little bit unusual in that we're not completely 100% funded. And you may remember back in 2006, those of you who lived in town, there was a referendum that failed, and so we're still at 75%. So what's been happening since about 2003 is a slow chipping away at the library budget. It goes down every year. And in 2010, at the end of 2010, when I looked at the statistics, our rate of acquisitions dropped by 18%, which is alarming to me in the long term. So I worry about the budget for our public library. I will tell you, though, that our county legislature really tries hard not to cut the library. And that's not the case for a lot of public libraries across the country. If you start to read about what's happening to public libraries and their funding, there's often do you have a police department or do you have a library? And I would say you need both. I don't think it's an either-or situation. But in our county, they try very hard not to decimate the library, but we have a slow chipping away. Virtually the only way I can save any money in the library is not to fill positions. So we're at a rate right now where we have 47 FTE, it's about 52 people, but when they moved to that location, they had 62 staff and about 55 FTE. So we're at the same rate of FTEs that we were at the old public library, where they had one program, story time. This year we saw a 20% increase in our program attendance. So we're doing much more with less, and that's a worry for me long term. The other thing about the county employees because we're a department of the county. We're not an agency. So we, every year, this was new to me too, every year I have to make a special presentation to the county legislature about our budget and why we need the budget. And they will send me a target budget, and if I'm going to go over that, it's an over-target request. I have to do a budget presentation to talk to them about the library, and then sometime in September I have to go defend that budget, and I can still lose it. But, like I said, they've been very supportive and tried very hard not to cut the library too much. That's an interesting experience, and you certainly learn a lot more about local politics, I think, when you have to do that. Youth Services Adult, an adult reference. That's another big difference in public libraries. There are completely, and I showed you the children's room and the children's stories. And this is a picture of the Youth Services Department here at the public library. The Youth Services, which really support early childhood literacy through story time, and adult reference, and they actually call it adult reference, adult services, and that was a new term for me, and one of the stories I loved is that the staff told me that outside their door, there's office, there's a little sign that says adult services, and this teenager came up and said, how old do I have to be to get in there? So the reference staff are pretty amazing. They, you know, as I said, it's internet tutoring. We do a lot of test proctoring, which is unusual. One of the few places in the county that do test proctoring, and we actually get a lot of Cornell students who come down for test proctoring. The genealogy research that I mentioned, job seekers I mentioned. And I, you know, as I said, I always encourage people to look at the website. So the foundation, the Friends, and the Finger Lakes Library System, I'm going to talk about separately. So because the library funding is both private and public, we have two different agencies that provide private funding for the library. So both the Friends of the Library and the Foundation support the mission of the library, but they do it through fundraising initiatives. So, and they're two completely separate organizations, and people are often very confused about the Library Foundation and the Friends of the Library, but they're completely separate. So I will tell you that, okay, I report to a 15-member Board of Trustees, but I also go to the Board of Directors meeting for the Library Foundation and the Board of Directors meeting for the Friends. So I have three different boards board meetings that I go to every month to make sure that all the glue is together for the library, making sure that everybody is kept in the loop. So the Friends direct an annual gift to the library based on the proceeds of their book sale. And that, I love this picture from their website of the book sale. I actually volunteered at the book sale in the information booth this year, and that was a really wonderful experience just to see a good cross-section of the demographics of the county. The foundation seeks private support through personal requests, and it works very much like the Library Development Office. The Library Foundation. And the Foundation offices are actually in the library, and the Executive Director's colleague and minor offices are a few doors down from my office. So the Board of Trustees established the Foundation back in 1993, and that was because at that point they didn't have it wasn't a 501c3, and it is now, the library is, but they needed a foundation where bequests could be directed, so it didn't come directly to the library. And the Friends of the Tompkins County Public Library, I found, they were founded in 1946, and they're actually chartered by the New York State Department of Education, which was something that was new. I thought that was a really interesting thing. And we also have many people from Cornell Library who have served on the Library Foundation, and our newest foundation director is Ann. She's on our foundation board. And actually, I should say that on the Board of Trustees, Gwen, and Eric and Martha are all on the Board of Trustees, and it's really wonderful. That's a great, it's a volunteer board, so you commit a good deal of time to supporting your local library by volunteering. So I had up there on the screen the word Finger Lakes Library System. So Finger Lakes Library System is, what New York did is the Department of the New York State Education Law divided New York up into geographic sections, and each section has a public library system. So we are a member of Finger Lakes Library System. It covers 5 counties, 33 libraries. So, and we are the central library for that. And becoming the central library is based on the size of the nonfiction collection. Okay. 1958. So as the central library, we're not just serving Hopkins County, but we serve the entire Finger Lakes Library System. So that's 33 libraries and a population of more than 313,000. And that number will go up after the 2010 census. So we do close to 1 million circulations every year, usually between over 860,000 to 1 million, somewhere in that range. It's very heavily used, and it goes all around the Finger Lakes. And we also are a pretty heavy interlibrary loan lender, which I found interesting. So I think that sometimes the public library systems can be very confusing. If you go to the Finger Lakes Library System webpage, you can look at all of the different, what all this different, what the regions mean, because some of it has to do with there's not a chartered library there, or there is a chartered library. And some of these libraries, some of the 33 libraries, are extremely rural. One person, maybe not a librarian, who works part-time. So the Finger Lakes Library System, what they do is they provide resources to those very small rural libraries they otherwise would not have. So they have these kits that put together for story time, for example, if the library couldn't afford to have all of the resources in a children's room. They circulated among the rural libraries. And as the central library, we get state money for a central book collection. So we get what's called central book aid funding. And the collection, we do the collection development, and we house it in the central library, but it's available to the entire system. But in fact, the entire collection is available to the entire library system. So, and we just recently, one of the things when I first got there, there are 6 county libraries in Tompkins County. There's one in Dryden, Newfield, Lansing, Trumansburg. I'm forgetting one. Danby. Yeah. But that's a reading room. Groton. That's it. So Danby and Caroline have reading rooms. They're not chartered libraries. So we have a memorandum of understanding with them to get materials to them. But the other 5 are actually chartered libraries. A lot of people wonder why these little county libraries aren't branches, and it's because they were chartered well before the Tompkins County Public Library became the county library. So, but we all use the same system.
What's the alternative library?
The alternative library participates in the Finger Lakes Library System, but it's not, it's kind of a unique place. It's alternative. Because it's not one of the chartered libraries in the Finger Lakes Library System, but they actually belong to the Finger Lakes Library System, and I believe they used it because they wanted the Polaris system, which is like the Voyager, the Notice, or the Endeavor. Its Libra system is what we use. So you have a shared database with all these libraries. And when I got there, you had to have a different card for every single little library in Tompkins County. But the materials were, in fact, being shipped all around from our library. So all of the directors are fairly new within 1 or 2 years, and we all got together and said, okay, we're using the same system. Let's just have one card. So it took us a year to get that in place, but it started on February 1st. So you don't need 6 different cards. You just need one card. It's long overdue, but I'm really glad that it's in place. A lot of this, I just like to show you what we're doing, because I think we're doing such cool and wonderful things. This has to do with the 6 differences that I listed, which was popular culture, community, connections, and volunteers. And so I really liked that opening quotation that I used, because public library really and truly is about a completely equal opportunity to come in and experience reading, art, quiet refuge for everyone. And it's really a wonderful place to come for programs. And we have a program coordinator who also does all of our media releases, who does these amazing programs. And she works with some people, like Eric, who helped us a lot with programming. One of my favorite programs was this technology petting zoo. back in November, we had purchased an iPad and Kindles and books and so forth and everything. And we had what we call technology setting zoos, where people could come to learn about how to use these materials without the pressure of having to buy them. And I thought we might, I was hoping we'd have one or two people, but we had four sessions and we had close to 100 people, you know, across, spread across them. And they really, and now, of course, after the holidays, everybody got their Kindle and their iPad and their whatever. And we get lots of calls about how to set them up and how to use them. And you can, you're, the Nook, Barnes & Noble is really working very hard with libraries to make things available on the Nook, which is really cool. So I think our public library contributes to our community well-being in a wonderful way. And continuing on talking about community connections, we really offer some critical services to people who are newly arrived in this country. And you know, we have a lot of services for families. Adult literacy is a big thing. People who may be reluctant readers, they use the graphic novels a lot, which is interesting. We serve the visually impaired and homebound. There's a mail service that's through Finger Lakes. That's a wonderful service. And, well, I'll tell you, I haven't done reference in a really long time. But the other night, I think it was the night of the snowstorm that didn't happen, I was walking through the library, and the reference librarian was somewhere helping someone. And this woman came up to me, and I had my name tag on, you know, because we wear name tags in the public library. And she said, I need your help. I need help. I need a tax form. I have to get my refund. So even though I hadn't done reference in a long time, I do taxes, so I thought I could probably help her. So we went over and we get lots of tax forms. We have one librarian who's responsible for setting up a web page, a wonderful web page that helps people get the forms they need. And so we went to look at the table, and she needed a very specialized form that I can't remember honestly what it was, but it wasn't one I knew. So I said, well, you know, I bet we can get this online. And she said, I don't know how to use a computer. So I'm looking around for the reference librarian. So I thought, well, okay, here we go. So I said, let's go learn to use the computer. Do you have a library card? So she had her library card. We got her signed on. We went right to the web page that the librarian had organized. We found the form that she wanted. We got her a print card. She got it printed. And as she left, it was a very powerful experience for me, because as she left, she said, I don't know how to thank you. I need this money. So I was really struck by how important the services are that we provide. And I was really glad that I had that opportunity to do that. It's very powerful for me. So, and we do a lot of collaboration. And I just have pictures from two of them. We do a lot of collaboration with Cornell. We have some amazing collaborations with Cornell. The Community Read is one that we have done for quite a number of years. It's based on the new student reading program, and the public library establishes a whole different set of programs based on the book that's selected. And we get, Cornell's very generous. They give us books that we distribute to all the county libraries and the schools and more than 30 not-for-profit agencies and organizations. And we have a Community Read coordinating librarian who works with all these organizations to set up book discussion groups, and that's a very good thing. Another, and now we're only talking about two collaborations because I could go on forever, but another really important one I think is the Family Reading Partnership, which is the organization that really tries to get books into the hands of babies and children and families. And so we just started a project last year to have a library book included. Each newborn gets, each mom and newborn gets a bag of books from the Family Reading Partnership. It's a wonderful service that they do, and they asked us to include, if they could include a library book and a library card for children along with a bibliography for parents who are looking for materials for their children. And so the book we picked was Lola at the Library, which is a favorite book, heavily used. And that picture with the elephant is actually, there's a little small room in the library if you haven't seen it. If you'd like a tour of the library, I'd be glad to give you one, but there's a children's room called, it's a small room just for children called the Reading Zoo. And our library card is an image from that. So we wanted to connect what they see at the library with using the library. So we have a new library card for that. So, and we also started a collaboration with TC3 last year because so many TC3 students use the library. So we have a lot of collaborations. So, and we do, a lot of programs. I think we provide a constructive, educational, exciting place for people to go. We serve as an information resource and referral center. And I mean, we're your library. And the other thing that I talked about that I mentioned in that in terms of organization and popular culture is volunteers. We don't even work with volunteers in an academic library, but volunteers are a really important part of public libraries. They, for example, in our public library, all of the volunteers shelve the audiovisual materials, which is 40% of the circulation, so they're doing a lot of shelving for us and helping us out. We have over 900 hours a month of volunteer help. It's pretty amazing. And it ranges from senior citizens, lots of college students, and then just professional people, retired people who maybe want to come in and do some work. We have a wonderful volunteer program called The Reader Is In, which is new. And this is something that was set up with the youth services. Someone who likes to read to children can be trained by the librarians to help a parent who maybe is in the library who needs a moment to go return a book or something and they can be read, has their children read to. And we've talked to Tompkins Learning Partners about using the Reader Is In program for English as a second language. So I know earlier I made, I talked about being scared of the children's room. The children's programs are pretty amazing here. And if you've had children, you probably have used the public library. So the summer reading program is one of the most wonderful. And this is a picture from the Stories in the Park that's in DeWitt Park in the summer on the day that there's the farmer's market is there. And this is Kelly. She does a great job. And, I tell you, everyone talks about, story time is so cute. So wonderful, but the thing that as I've gone to them and observed, I don't have children, but I did teach 10th grade English, and I know the importance of early childhood literacy because some of the students I taught were on a third grade reading level, so children's programs and children's literacy is really important to me. But when I go to those programs, what I really see is these children's librarians are helping these children. It's a part of helping them make sense of the world and organize things like, oh, the sun comes up in the morning and the moon goes at night. And it's wonderful to watch the wheels turn in their brains and see them getting to understand that. So we have a lot. We have a lot of computer resources just for children. We have computers that have early childhood literacy programs. They're fun. And this is from the children's, the kids' website. And, what I love, okay, so maybe I'm a kid, but I love the little black box with the eyes. I'm not going to tell you what's in there. You're going to have to go to the website and see, but it's one of my favorite things to do. If I'm having a bad day, I go to the children's website. Teenagers. Very hard to get teenagers in the library. It's not cool to come in the library once you're a certain age. So we work really hard to get them into the library, and the youth services librarian we just hired is a teen services librarian. Once you get them in the library, magic starts to happen. And this past summer, in the summer reading program, we have a teen blog where they can submit book reviews of books that they read. And we use the program Wordle, you may have heard of it, where it creates word clouds. And so we put their book reviews through Wordle and posted those in the library. And it took off because they loved coming into the library to find their book review on the wall. And so we had more book reviews submitted in June and July last year than we did the entire previous year. So once you get them in, so this, we have an e-reader that we're experimenting with. There is reading gap for boys when they reach about 15. They don't like to read anymore, but reading from a Nintendo DSi XL is a lot cooler than reading from a book. And it comes with 100 classic stories, and the librarian who discovered this has actually contacted Nintendo to see if we could do something with them. And we did have a 14-year-old boy pick it up, start to read Romeo and Juliet. It was an abridged version. He brought it back and he said, I want the real book. So we're hoping that takes off. And then the teen services webpage, where we do have teen computers, homework help, test prep resources. I think teens is an area where our public library needs to do more. We have a very small teen area, and that's on the long-term strategic plan for us to do a lot more for teens. So the librarians would like to have we'd like to have a dedicated computer lab for teams where they create the content. So that's a dream of mine, that we will be able to do more with teams. So all of the differences that I listed, you know, they may be obvious, but when you start to go deep into them, you see how pretty significant they are. There is, you probably are aware of the OCLC report, Perceptions of Libraries, that was back in 2005, and it's been updated. And one of the interesting facts that came out of that is that in the tough economy, 81% of Americans who have been affected by the bad economy have a library card. And 68% of Americans who haven't been affected by the economy have a library card. So there's a wonderful handout from that OCLC did. If you haven't seen it, it's called How Libraries Stack Up. Have you seen this? Everybody seen this? This is wonderful. It has a lot of wonderful facts about libraries, such as on a daily basis, over 300,000 Americans use their public library to get help looking for a job. And on a daily basis, the public library circulates as many, public libraries in the U.S. circulate as many materials as FedEx ships worldwide. Yeah, so it's kind of cool. So, and this library value calculator, we have this on our website, so it helps you figure out the amount of money that the library saves you. We put this up about 6 months ago. So let's say you borrow two books, one movie, you download one audio book, you get one children's book, you use one database, you go to one program, and you use the computer once in a week. On a weekly basis, your savings is just under $90, and on an annual basis, your savings would be more than $4,600. So the bad economy, people really see the public library as a good value. So what does the future hold for public libraries? Well, I don't know, have you seen this website, Paleo Futures? It's a really fun website about the future that never was, and I love this because everybody's sort of lounging and reading their microfilm book on the ceiling.
Yeah,
so it's a great website if you haven't looked at it. It's really fun. So for public libraries, we know that rapidly changing content format, e-books, and that's on everybody's mind, the implications of for collection development for that for public libraries, how do you keep the collection refreshed, how do you circulate these things. We are going to get, you know, the youth services librarians, you know, I said, what do you want? They said, we want an iPad because it's really fun because when you do the story coming, you show the book. With an iPad, you can have the music going, and so we'll be doing that. But I would say that, you know, the rapidly changing format content is a challenge for us. Technology infrastructure is really critical because sometimes people are more willing to be patient about waiting in line for a book. But if they come in and they see really outdated computers or you don't have the software, they're a lot less forgiving. And so technology infrastructure, I know it sounds kind of strange, but you have to update that more often than you even maybe do your print collection because shelving is kind of a stable thing. But computers change continuously, so we have to pay attention to that. So if we don't have adequate hardware and software, you know, we're dead in the water. So I was recently asked to join a county committee on broadband access. And one of the reasons I jumped at the chance is so that you could talk about the importance of making sure that the local libraries have enough broadband, because even if you hardwire the entire county, not everybody can afford the computers, and not everyone can afford the access, at least not yet. So there was a great article that was done by a gentleman with the BBC. Oh, 2 minutes. Okay, all right. Oh, I'm on my next to the last slide. And one of the things they talk about why public libraries are really important, I don't think I have to convince you of this. The environment is a great environment in which to learn. You've got human connections, free internet access, and expert staff. So the last slide I will leave you with is our new vision statement. In 2010, we went through the strategic planning process and we came up with a new vision, mission, values, goals, and objectives. So I hope that if you don't use the library on a regular basis that you will and you will come and visit me because we have this amazing resource with amazing staff. And you know, it's your library. Your taxes pay for it, so use it. So thank you, and I know that I could talk for a lot longer, but I'll stop and if there are questions that I can answer.
Anybody one or two questions asked?
Thanks, Sam. I'm going to ask a question that I'm thinking all day, which is about the border, about the Buffalo Street. And I'm wondering how you interpret that. I mean, do you interpret that as, well, maybe the folks are, you know, the Christians are going away and the public library, or are people going to want to see some place like this?
Well, I always thought that the library, it's more about, I mean, it's not just books. It never has been books. It's always been about people. So, and if you come to the, if you use the public library, you know, the art, the programs, and the people come there for that human connection. You know, people need to have human interactions. So the thing about a public library, though, is that you don't have to buy anything. It's not set up to sell you anything other than personal enrichment. And I was really sad about Buffalo Street Books closing. We've collaborated with them a lot. I am really sad, but all of the programs, the author signings, the story times, are all at the library free of charge. So I'm sad that independent bookstores are closing. I'm sad when Smedley's closed. I don't know if anybody remembers Smedley. You know, I think it's more about the economy and the market and what people want to... I mean, if we really wanted to save Buffalo Street Books, then everybody should have gone and bought 10 books there. Borders, I think, is a whole other thing. And one of the things is that when you start to track Barnes & Noble and Borders in terms of understanding where technology and publishing are going, they didn't pay attention. You know, they got on a little bit too late.
Also,
when
you go to Borders and you buy a book and they have a stamp over the ISBN, they refused to change that, and so that was extra effort. Somebody had to print that stamp and put it over, and just replicated the same thing that was on it because it had a different inventory control system.
Right.
And I think it was a business model for Borders.
It's a business model, but it was also about customer service, too. I'm just saying.
Okay. Related in this country, what you have to do continually will never end. How is that able to work so that you're not terrified that you're not going to have any money?
Well, I am terrified that we're not going to have it. But I will say that our community supports the public library. As a matter of fact, so, but one thing I forgot to tell you is that you have an opportunity to help the library. Is that February is public? Seriously, February is Library Lovers Month. It's a national thing for public libraries, and all of the participating bookstores. There are 7 of them in town, including Buffalo Street Books. I have a basket up here with Library Lovers Month 2011 buttons up here and vouchers. And if you have a button and a voucher and you shop the last weekend of February in any of the participating bookstores, a percentage comes to the library. We have a great relationship with Barnes & Noble. They really do a lot for us in terms of making things available the day it's published. So before you leave, get that voucher and that button.
All right. We're over time. I'm sure Susan will stay and answer other questions.
Absolutely.
Some of you may want to get to work. So,
thank you.